AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Jordan, that's got to be killing you. A little Nickelback for walk-up music. How do you feel about that?
You know, it's not my cup of tea. I like it a little faster and a little louder, but it's okay. It's okay. I'll let it
go. Gotcha. Jordan Fife, president of BioUrgent Trading, is our guest right now. It's good to talk with you again, Jordan, buddy. Okay.
Good to talk to you, Chip.
Yeah, let's jump right into it here, because these energy markets, the ag markets are paying attention to what is happening in the energy trade. There is no question about that. And I just, in general, how are the energy markets doing? There are several happenings around the globe that the energy markets have got to keep tabs on right now. How are they doing?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. It's not one issue that we're dealing with in the energy markets. It's several. The biggest one that's getting the most headlines right now is Israel and Gaza, and rightfully so. And now the involvement with Iran. Iran is, of course, the third largest member of OPEC in terms of oil production behind Saudi Arabia and Iraq. So it's a big deal when you have these kind of geopolitical risks going on. But as you alluded to earlier, it's not just what's going on in Israel and Gaza, and then subsequently what's happening with Iran. There's also what's going on in Russia. And Russia's oil production and refining is down right now 10%. It was down 14% last month, so it's getting a little bit back. But Ukraine has successfully hit several of their refineries with drones. So that's another thing that you've got going on. And then, you know, one other big note is what's going on in the Red Sea. We have the Houthis that are disrupting trade there. So you have major implications with geopolitical risk going on in multiple locations right now. And what's happening is we're seeing an increase in Brent 95 and $100 calls. You're seeing Goldman, you're seeing other large banks calling for $100 oil. And I think we could easily see that happen if we don't see a de-escalation in multiple areas of geopolitical risk.
Okay. Iran and OPEC in particular. I get questions all the time, Jordan, about just how important OPEC production is, how much influence it has on the price of gas at a pump in the U.S. Explain that to us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got a massive impact on it, because remember, there are two different benchmarks for crude oil. One is Brent, and that is the North Sea up in Scotland. But that is the rest of the world. Think of it that way. And the second is WTI, or West Texas Intermediate. And the United States is the largest producer of oil. I've said that on the show and a multiple other times, and it's just a fact. But when you have OPEC that supplies a ton of the rest of the world, you're talking parts of Europe, you're talking parts of Asia, you're talking obviously the Middle East, you're talking parts of South America even, and Africa. Their influence on the price of oil is huge. And that's going to just translate again, because the WTI Brent spread is only going to be able to separate so much before basically the arb will blow up to the point where it won't make mathematical sense. So when OPEC talks, it will eventually trickle down to the pump in the United States. It's not a one for one, but it is meaningful. And the spread between Brent and TI right now is holding in there. And I expect it to. The United States continues to produce record every single month. And I think it will continue. We just had several reports that down wells that have been abandoned are basically being looked at again. I think eventually we're going to overshoot the landing. That's what all markets do. We'll eventually overproduce. But for right now, this is actually a very advantageous time for people that are producing oil in the United States. They are just printing money.
Wow. Okay. I want to come back to that Russia. Does Russia, in the situation in Ukraine and its relationship with OPEC, does it still have the potential or the ability to influence price in Europe and around the globe?
Yes, but I mean, they are, with sanctions that are going on right now, they're selling at a discount. That's a fact. They're selling at a discount, but their largest importer right now is China. And China is the largest importer of oil, period. In 2023, they were the largest importer of oil. I think they're up like 10% year on year in terms of oil imports, but they are importing, or exporting rather, Russia a ton to China right now. And they're the largest counterpart. Their ability is still very important, but it has waned a little bit with lack of trading partners. But that being said, China and India have stepped up huge, and they're just buying discounted oil, which helps their economies, you know, pretty sizably.
Well, China, there's another variable that's tough, if not impossible, to measure here on the energy markets, because their economic growth, or lack of economic growth. I just wonder, how sustainable is all this demand for energy into China?
That's a great question. And, you know, just to add even a further wrinkle to that, there was reports last month that 40% of all cars sold in the month of March in China were EV. They're EV. And I said this on a podcast earlier this week, or maybe last week. My timelines get hazy. But I have an old boss that lives in Thailand, and he went to a car expo there, and literally every car at the expo was EV. Not one internal combustion engine there. So when you talk about demand in China and how it really adds up, it's so difficult to do. It's a black box over there. You can't get the data like you do out of the EIA, and it's just hard to piece it all together. So you've got increase in EVs, you've got an increase in Russian crude oil coming in, you've got a growing population, but to your point, it's not growing like it was before.
Right.
It's very difficult to put it all together and really add up where all the pieces go. Long term, I think you will see a decrease in oil consumption there. Short term, I think they've still got a pretty steep climb to go, and we'll see a lot of oil exported to China and refined there. They're still going to be leading the way in terms of demand for the next, call it, decade or two.
Well, they're not putting up all those coal-fired electric plants to let them sit idle, are they?
That's right. No. You don't buy a Ferrari and park it in the garage. When you do
exactly.
that, they're showing their hand pretty strongly. I agree with you.
Yeah. No doubt. Okay. Talk to me about just the general outlook. You said the banks are placing their bets on $100 crude with the call options. Is it kind of a given that we're going to get there?
You know, I'm not giving trading advice, but in my opinion, I think we're going to touch $100 Brent crude.
Okay.
I really do. I think we just named three of them, and we're probably leaving three off the list. I think those geopolitical risks, it is a tinderbox.
Yeah.
If Israel responds in any way whatsoever, it's going to go to $100. I believe they will. I believe there will be some sort of retaliation, and we're going to see crude spike on that. Over the weekend, we saw Netanyahu take a little bit of a backseat, and he got a lot of praise from a lot of different European leaders and Asian leaders in the United States. But now it feels that they want to do something to retaliate against the attack. Right, wrong, or indifferent, once that happens, I do believe oil will jump between $3 and $5. So that will take us to basically $95. And then we're just a hair tick away from getting back to 100. If there is an actual conflict between Iran and Israel, you could see 120 and 130. And that's not a joke. I don't know if it'll happen. If you get a couple of missiles that go back and forth, 100, I think, will happen. If you get an actual conflict in a war, 110, 120, 130 is certainly within the realm of possibility.
Man, oh, man. So for users of energy-intensive businesses like farming, it's not too late to get some upside protection in place. What do you do? Do you buy some calls on this? How do you protect yourself?
You could there's calls that are going to be more closely related to, you don't need to do a crude call because it's not a one for one there. You would do a heating oil call because there is no distillate contract anymore on the board. So it's a heating oil, and that's your best bet if you're wanting a little protection from what happens if there is that. They're probably priced pretty expensive right now, and it depends on, you know, how far out you want to go on the curve. I'm sure your audience understands how pricing volatility and pricing time works on a call, but that would probably be your best option, depending on how expensive the call is.
Okay.
I think that's probably a pretty good strategy.
Okay. All right. Real quick, what are you hearing on the GREET model? Is there and the potential to move corn-based ethanol onto a pathway to sustainable aviation fuel?
I don't think it's going to happen in the near future, to be perfectly honest. The carbon intensity of the corn-based ethanol plants within the United States is too high. And so it's kind of a chicken and an egg. You're going to need to do carbon sequestration. You're going to need to do something to lower your carbon intensity score. There's going to need to be a major initiative from the government to subsidize it, because the people that I've talked to that are leading the way in sustainable aviation fuel, just on a model alone, does not work. Even if you're using domestic ethanol as your feedstock, it's just not there. So you would need, and I believe it's $1.25 tax credit to produce a sustainable aviation fuel, up to $1.75 for each point below a certain carbon intensity. Even with that up to $1.75 tax credit, the math still doesn't get you there to make it. There has been announcements just today, actually. I think Boeing placed its largest order of sustainable aviation fuel. I think that's more of a public relations thing right now. We would need to see a vast improvement in the technology to make it a sustainable long-term play. Maybe it gets there. I just don't think it's something that's unfortunately right around the corner. I don't think it's going to affect 2024 or even 2025.
What happens if Trump wins the White House this fall? Because there's an attitude that the Trump administration will just clear out all the clean fuel initiatives by the Biden administration. Is that a legitimate concern?
I mean, it's a concern. You know, a change in any administration, whether it's Trump or whether it were, you know, name another Republican, or if it were Biden, or name another Democrat, you know, the change is always the question. I think there is some concern, because if you just went back to the last time, and I've always said this, Chip, I'm not trying to be political. I really am not. But if you just look back at the last data set we had from when Trump was there, he had an EPA director that basically gutted the RFS, RINs prices drop. It could happen again. He could also tariff China. And if he did that, that would actually help the used cooking oil, which in effect would help bean oil. So there's a positive spin to a Trump administration there.
Gotcha.
That a lot of people probably haven't thought through.
Gotcha. Man, I enjoy these conversations, Jordan. Thank you so much, buddy.
Anytime. Thanks, Chip, for having me.
All right. You bet. Jordan Fife, president of trading at BioErgia. I'll be right back to wrap up this morning's AgriTalk.